This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Hello, Richard Bacon again. As I mentioned in the prestigious part one of this week's podcast, Mark and Simon are away today, but don't worry. We've still got reviews of Crazy Heart, The Last Station, The Lovely Bones and Solomon Kane. So get ready for your weekly dose of wittertainment. Boyd and Floyd are here. Nigel Floyd and Boyd Hilton. At 10, Astro Boy. Boyd.
Yes, this is one of only two films in the top 10 that neither Nigel nor I have actually seen. We have to be clear about this.
This doesn't happen when Simon and Mark are doing this.
It does sometimes.
I sit there at home listening.
It does sometimes.
Mark, they go through all the films.
Mark famously didn't see An Education until he was beaten severely for weeks on end and finally had to succumb.
If we were you, you would have pretended to have seen it as well. That's all I'm saying. Wouldn't
How
you?
I bet you would have done. You.
Of course, shameless.
How
yes,
dare you?
You would.
Yes, some years ago, I may have written a film column that I perhaps I did once or twice send someone else to see the film on my behalf. That doesn't happen anymore, boy.
No,
people change.
Good. I'm glad. Anyway, neither have seen it, but if anyone has seen it, please let us know. It is a CGI animated film. There are quite a few family kids films in the top 10 because it is half term. And if anyone's seen it, if they want to tell us what it's like. But I feel it's, you know, generally supposed to be a pretty decent CGI animated film about a little robot.
All right, let me know what you thought. 85058, bacon at bbc.co.uk. Do you remember that film? Was it called Lake House with Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves?
Is that
its
name?
I was once, I went to a meal in a London restaurant and there was a woman there from Film PR who I knew. And I said, hey, how are you? And she said, oh, good, we've got the party for Lake House downstairs. And I went, oh, wow, God, Sam, what's that film like? And she said, you reviewed it yesterday. Would you like to know what you thought?
Cool
and I said, yes. And she said, you didn't think it was very good?
Right. Shameful.
Shameful people
confession.
Change.
Yes.
Nothing to be proud of. Let's go to the UK's number 9, Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Squeakquel.
Now, I have seen this. You haven't, have you?
I haven't. It's been around for 8 weeks in the charts, but I have somehow managed to resist seeing a film which has the suffix The Squeakquel.
Do you know what? It wasn't that bad. It was quite funny and entertaining. And the kids in the audience, when I saw it, loved it, lapped it up. So, you know, and it has done 8 weeks in the chart. The only film that's been in the chart longer than that is Avatar. So that's pretty decent showing. 21 million it's made.
You can only try and review that by, I suppose, looking at the reaction of the kids in the
Absolutely.
Room. It's not aimed
at
you. And, okay. Let's get to number 8, A Single Man, Nigel.
Well, Tom Ford is, you know, as we know, a designer of clothes. And I believe that you're wearing a particularly fetching item of clothing today related to the recent death of a major fashion figure.
I am wearing probably the most boring item of clothing that Alexander McQueen ever made. That's, yes, I am.
Your own tribute to him.
In some ways it is, yeah. But do you think this is... It's certainly a stylish film, Boyd. Has it got much substance?
There are two schools of opinion on A Single Man, I think it's fair to say. Some people... a lot of critics have said it's all style and not much substance, or it's almost too much like a TV ad, all these things. I agree with the good Dr. Kermode, who made the point that would they really be saying that if they didn't know that the director of this film is a world-famous fashion designer? I think if you watched the film, didn't know who directed it, and just took it for what it is, it's a beautifully made, intricate, highly detailed film. But the substance is there, and it's also incredibly moving and a fascinating subject matter. And I think it's very unfair, actually, that people have said it looks like a TV ad. There are bits of it that do look beautiful. It's beautiful. But that's kind of the whole point. The main character is a very meticulous, stylish man. That's kind of the whole point of it. So I think it's a fantastic film. Did you see Tom Ford at the Brits? That was bizarre. Tom Ford presented an award at the Brits, and clearly hardly anyone knew who he was.
Really?
That was weird. It was almost like, I felt it was like ITV told him, maybe it was like the BAFTAs and they got him in before, you know, BAFTAs, yeah, he's a film director now, he should present an award at the BAFTAs, maybe
but
he will.
But of course a lot of people don't know who he is.
No, of course they don't. So there's 6 million people watching the Brits thinking, who's this guy?
I was at the Brits, which means I definitely didn't see him at the Brits, because when you're there, you don't pay any attention to what's happening on the stage. It's Colin Firth is terrific in it, isn't he?
He is. I mean, you know, he's definitely right that he's in the frame for various awards, because it is a terrific performance. I mean, nobody really does reined-in emotion like Colin Firth. He's just got that taped. And he can have a level of quietness and containedness about him that not many other people can reach, because a lot of people doing that just look vacant. But he looks like a man who's thinking. He looks like an intelligent man. You believe he's a professor.
Even if you didn't know who directed it, it's very obvious watching it that it's directed by someone with an eye for detail.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it looks, it is beautiful. Yeah.
Okay, that's a single man at eight. At seven, Invictus, Nigel Floyd.
Well, actually, Boyd and I were at the same screening, and we spoke about it briefly afterwards, and we both, I think, bought into it from the get-go, despite the fact that I'm not a sporting man and I care less about rugby. I loved the fact that from almost about 10 minutes in, I was sort of on the verge of tears. I mean, it was an irresistible story. I mean, resistance was futile in the sense that it's not really a film about the rugby match. It's a film about Nelson Mandela trying to create a rainbow nation and using a rugby team to do that. And I thought that was an extraordinary thing.
Is it good, Boyd?
I really liked it. We read the book on Simon Mayo's old show. The book was based on, remember him, Simon Mayo? The book is fantastic. It's a non-fiction book which meticulously traces what happened when Nelson Mandela got involved in rugby in South Africa and then in the final. And the book is unbelievably moving. I mean, you are literally on the verge of tears throughout the book. So I thought, if I hadn't read the book, I don't know, but it's interesting that Nigel was equally as moved as I. A lot of people, again, have been harsh about this, and a lot of critics have been quite harsh about it, saying it sentimentalises the situation, sentimentalises Mandela, makes him into a saint. I kind of don't mind that, really. He kind of was, in a way, he was a saint. And the elements of the film that are unrealistic, people have said the depiction of rugby in it is ridiculous and these things didn't happen. But it's all poetic license. It's actually an effective telling of a very interesting element of history, of Nelson Mandela getting so involved in this particular rugby match.
OK, thank you. The UK's number six, My Name is Khan.
Now, nobody has seen that here. Unfortunately, these films do not get previewed.
Dear me.
They do not get previewed for the press, ever. I did, however, go to my local Odeon in Streatham yesterday to see Valentine's Day, of which more later, and I noticed that My Name is Khan was showing there. So the idea that these films don't get the distribution that they deserve...
Well, what is this?
This is a Bollywood film. This is the biggest ever opening in the UK for a Bollywood film. It's screen average. It's made £10,000 per screen, which is the highest in the top 10. It's a huge hit. But as Nigel says, it's absolutely true. The distributors do not show them to critics, which is a shame. I'd love to see. I'd like to know what it's like. It sounds like a fascinating film. It's about a guy with Asperger's who gets arrested for being a terrorist. It sounds like really interesting stuff. But we haven't seen it. Again, if anyone has seen it, let us know what it's like. But it is a huge hit.
You also hadn't seen Astro Boy, which was at number 10. James from London says, Astro Boy is a complete rip-off. It is an awful poor man's robot. If my seven-year-old wasn't sleeping, I would have run out the cinema relieved that I had to take no more. Let's go to number five. Percy Jackson and the Olympians. The Lightning Thief. Yes, Boyd Hilton.
Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. I have seen this. I saw this with my eight-year-old nephew.
What is it?
This is adapted from a series, a book, an American novel. It's kind of like a sub-Harry Potter book. And last week, Dr. Kermode was very harsh about it, said, what is the point of it? Because it's such a sub-Harry Potter thing. My answer to that is, well, my eight-year-old nephew loved it. So the point of it is, obviously, it's not as good as the Harry Potter films, although the first few Harry Potter films were incredibly mediocre, the actual films. This is pretty mediocre, but all I can say is the eight-year-old loved it and was highly entertained, and it's not that bad. I wouldn't suggest any adults go and see it on their own without children being with them.
Okay. At four, The Princess and the Frog. Nigel?
No, didn't bother. I try not to see any children's films, if I can.
That's very harsh. The Princess and the Frog is an old-fashioned, Disney's first old-fashioned, non-CGI, old-school animation film for many years, and it's really good. It's beautifully done. The first 5-10 minutes of it are fantastic, I think, where it kind of sets the scene. It's set in New Orleans in the Jazz Age. It's really well done. It's just a joy to see an old-fashioned animated film in these days of 3D and CGI and all of that. And it's hugely refreshing. Great songs by Randy Newman as well. I'm a big Randy Newman fan. I think people should go and see it.
Dear Richard, I watched Astro Boy with my 7-year-old son, 8-year-old and 4-year-old grandsons. They loved it and were quiet throughout. I enjoyed it too, says Michael in Liverpool. Let's go to the UK's current number three, The Wolfman. Nigel Floyd.
Nothing like as bad as it should have been. I mean, we know that it went through two directors. We know that it went through two different soundtracks. We know that there were reshoots, that they put loads of CGI in. They threw away lots of footage. It ought to have been absolutely cataclysmically terrible. But Benicio del Toro is perfect casting for the Wolfman because he's already halfway there. He's quite a hirsute man to begin with and gives a good performance. For once, Anthony Hopkins doesn't overact, which is a bit of a shocker these days. And I thought it was enjoyable, if a mess.
Boyd Hilton.
Yeah, it's mediocre. It's fine. It's absolutely fine.
Not worth going to see. Because there are films out there that aren't mediocre. So you'd have to get through all of those before you thought about going to see The Wolfman.
Worth spending, you know, £9-10 on that.
I was living in Blackheath last year and they were filming it there in Greenwich Park. And I used to come home about 1:45 in the morning after my nighttime show and all this fake smoke would be billowing out and you could see the lights. And I'd go running in there the next morning and they left the set up. Even that connection to the film hasn't made me want to go and see it.
Yeah, you were there and you still haven't seen it.
Let's go to number two. The current number two is Avatar.
Boys. Yeah, it's done quite well.
We've ranted about this between us.
We have.
We've argued.
Here we have. It's now officially, it's the biggest UK box office hit ever. It's the biggest global box office hit ever, the biggest US. It's broken all the records. It's made more money than ever, any film.
It's done better than Three and Out.
Incredibly better than Three and Out, yeah, absolutely. It's vying for the BAFTAs, we said, most joint... Highest number of nominations with the two other films, with The Hurt Locker and An Education. Highest number of... But it's very interesting, I think, on Sunday, whether it will do well in the BAFTAs. I think it's genuinely interesting this year, because last year, was all about Slumdog Millionaire won everything, and we knew it was going to. But this year, I think it's a big battle, which was the argument we had over this very technically amazing, entertaining, gloriously successful film versus... a harder, tougher, difficult, lower-budget film, The Hurt Locker, and the other kind of, you know, lower-budget film, Education, in the BAFTAs case. So I think it's fascinating to see what's going to happen. And it's incredible how well it's done, really. I think when it came out, I don't remember anyone saying this is going to be the biggest film of all time. I don't remember anyone thinking that.
Nigel?
I don't think anyone believed that. I think we thought that it was sort of going to do okay, and everyone was going to say, well, it's not going to do the same business as Titanic. It is edging towards, or has now, I think, become... the most successful film of all time, and I cannot see it. I mean, the story is unbelievably banal, despite the fact that the effects are astounding and have just driven, you know, film technology way, way forward, a huge quantum leap forward. It is quite dull.
Yeah, I think it should win the Oscar. I'm not that bothered by the plot and the dialogue's not very good, but as a cinematic experience, it's incredible. I watched The Hurt Locker last night and I liked it a lot. It feels authentic. You can tell that the writer spent some time with army bomb disposal units in Iraq. It's exciting and it's tense and it doesn't have a conventional sort of linear narrative, does it? It's really interesting. But I've still seen stuff a bit like it in a way. You know, it's the same cinematographer as United 93. I don't know,
it's
Avatar,
film,
I've never seen
it?
Anything like Avatar. But, I've never seen anything like that on a screen.
But,
which is the bigger achievement? Which is more extraordinary?
Hurt Locker is a better film, isn't it? Isn't it a better... It's just better.
I don't know what you want from a film. I suppose Avatar's like a great painting, isn't it? There might not be much of a story there, but you appreciate the technique. You look at it and you go, wow, how did... I couldn't do that. Whereas I don't really do that with...
But it's got such a
I'm not saying I could make Hurt Locker, which I appear to be saying. But yeah. I think you get my general point. No, Nigel?
I think that it looks like an astounding fairground ride. And that's what it feels like. And I don't want to go into a cinema and feel like I'm sitting in a roller coaster.
Which is the better cinematic achievement?
Hurt Locker. Achievement. Yeah. As a work of art, in terms of quality, in terms of all the different elements together, Hurt Locker is a better film than Avatar. Sure, it's, you know... People are going to see it repeatedly because it looks fantastic and it immerses you and all of that, and it's great and it's hugely entertaining.
How many BAFTAs is it up for?
7.
Wow, which one? Is it up for foreign language?
Sadly not.
Very good.
James Cameron gave his Golden Globes acceptance speech in Na'vi. That's how much of a silly man he is.
Let's go to number one, and it's Valentine's
Day. Number one, Valentine's Day. Well, its time has been and gone. It should never have come in the first place. This is an abysmal film, and I have to say, sitting through it at the Streatham Odeon, I just kept thinking, Julia Roberts got paid $500,000 per minute for her 6-minute cameo in this film. And there's a blooper reel at the end where they get the lines wrong. I think for that kind of money, you might get it right the first time. It's abysmal. Everything about it is abysmal. It's worse than Love Actually, which is hard to believe, because how can it be worse than Love Actually? You know, cataclysmically awful.
Yes, it's a disappointment. It's a marketing thing rather than an actual proper film. They came up with the idea of getting 50 million Hollywood stars to all be in this film. They've all contractually got the same amount of space on the poster, so you see this poster with about 20 big Hollywood stars. You recognise all of them. They've all got their kind of equal amount of screen time. Half of the stories I've already forgotten. I only saw it about a week and a half ago. And it was a huge hit on Valentine's Day. Every couple in Great Britain and America seemingly went to see Valentine's Day. 50 million in America... 3.5 million here already. But as Nigel says, I don't imagine anyone's going to see it this weekend.
So your beloved films are Hurt, Locker, Moon. No one goes to see them. Do you sometimes think, I hate the British cinema-going public?
Not at all. I can totally understand why you'd go and see Valentine's Day with your partner and have a perfectly good time. I'm not nearly as offended as it by Nigel's, but having said that, it's not nowhere near as good as Love Actually, which was great.
We need to, both sides of that argument represented. Here's an email from Tony. He says, hi, guys. Tony from Leicester here. Leicester. I'm flabbergasted about the assumption that small Brit flicks get the screen time and promotion they deserve, especially outside the capital. Unlike you culturally privileged lot in London, we in the backward, steam-powered Midlands have fed a diet of Hollywood stodge. Obviously, In the Loop dealt with issues we up here would struggle to understand. But seeing as my wife had been granted a visa to London once or twice, we thought we'd like to watch said movie and do our bit to support a British film. Even though Leicester has 3 multiplex cinemas, we still had to wait several months after its general release to see it at one of the 2 packed, in brackets, screenings at our small, token, local art house cinema.
I think we should say, in defence of the Film Council, that they have set up a fund now, the purpose of which is, for films like Fish Tank, they give them a certain amount of money after the film has been made to aid with the distribution of the film. Because the hardest thing is, as David Parfitt was saying earlier on, you've got to get in there and you've got to secure a bridgehead in the cinema. Now, you would think, with all of these multi-screen cinemas being built, there would be space somewhere in Screen 8 for a film like Fish Tank to be screened in the week of release.
But that's not the way they work. The market determines what films they put in these cinemas.
They are ruthless.
So they throw out a British film if it doesn't rate.
That was a brilliant email, because I totally admit that we're so privileged. We have so many art house cinemas in London. And most of the major cities do have at least 1 or 2 art house cinemas, in my experience. But if you don't, and you know that, then it's terrible.
I live in an area where there's quite a few art house cinemas and multiplex cinemas, and I still sometimes can't find the little British film that I want to see. It is difficult. Mark Kermode has emailed. Astro Boy actually wasn't that bad.
Okay.
The Lake House was awful. That is all. Then he sent another email saying, "Oh, and Boyd's right about Single Man. No one would have said it was a fashion film unless they knew," in capital letters, "who Tom Ford was in advance."
Brilliant. I'm just honoured that he's listening. And I believe Simon is listening from his gym. He was tweeting earlier.
Oh, could I just say to Mark, if he is listening, that I'm halfway through the book, It's Only a Movie.
Oh, my friend Justin E. Collins has finished the book, Mark Kermode's book, and said it was brilliant.
It is brilliant. I've read it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about... I interviewed him about that very book.
I know, I was listening. It was fascinating.
Well worth reading.
Yes.
Let's go on to the week's new releases. We're going to look at Crazy Heart, The Lovely Bones, Solomon Kane and The Last Station. We'll start with Crazy Heart. Boyd, what is it?
Crazy Heart. A lot of people are saying this is like The Wrestler, in that The Wrestler was about a washed-up has-been wrestler, played by Mickey Rourke, and this is about a washed-up has-been country and western singer. I think that's a little bit of an easy kind of facile thing to say, because there are differences, although it does star a man, Jeff Bridges, as Bad Blake is the name of the character, and he is definitely washed up. At the beginning, he's playing a bowling alley, so he's not exactly at the height of his success. And he does fall for a younger lady, played by the great Maggie Gyllenhaal. And the interesting thing is, we're talking about the BAFTAs and the Oscars, he has won, Jeff Bridges, all of the awards for Best Actor so far, pretty much, in the build-up to the BAFTAs and the Oscars. He will win the Oscar. Whether he wins on Sunday the BAFTA is interesting to know. But anyway, let's hear a clip of him, and he's singing, I believe, at the beginning of this clip.
This ain't no place for the weary kind. You know that song? Hmm?
Can't remember who did it.
That's the way it is with good ones. You're sure you've heard them before?
You wrote that?
Yes, ma'am. Just now.
So unfair.
What?
Some people give 10 years of their life to be able to do something like that, and it just pours out of you.
You mad at me? You want me to go to a motel?
No.
What?
I don't want you to go.
Well, what then?
Well, you're writing a song on my bed.
So?
So, every time I lie down in him, hear that beautiful goddamn song, and you're gonna be out there running around, not even remembering this day. I can't even forget.
Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart, Nigel Floyd. He's nominated for a BAFTA and an Oscar. The chairman of BAFTA, who was with us earlier, predicting he will win the Oscar, but not necessarily the BAFTA. What do you think of this film?
I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, I don't think it's as good as everyone else thinks it is. That doesn't alter the fact that Jeff Bridges' performance, and in fact Maggie Gyllenhaal's performances, are both extraordinary. And it is Jeff Bridges' year. He has been nominated four times before. He was nominated for The Last Picture Show, which I think was back in 1972.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
For an Oscar. So, I mean, he's got to win this year because, you know, they give people these awards when it's their time. A lot of people have won them for films which weren't as good as other things they had done before, but it will happen this year, definitely.
But I think he does deserve it. I mean, I agree with that. There is a sentimental element to the fact, to reason why he will win the Oscar. But he is phenomenal in it. It's like you watch the film and you think this must have been invented for him because he sings and plays the guitar and sings all the songs himself, no miming or any of that. He does them brilliantly. I bought the soundtrack album. I was so impressed with the songs, which are mainly written by T-Bone Burnett. The song which you heard him play in the beginning there will win the Oscar as well for best song, I guarantee you that.
But then again, you thought The Dude was written for him as well.
Yeah, but this one is so much all about him. I think he must be in every single scene. It's adapted from a novel read, so it wasn't the case that it was completely written. So embodies the role. It's astonishing. You just believe he is a country singer. Quick mention for Colin Farrell, who plays his kind of younger rival who he influenced and writes songs for.
Who's not credited.
Not credited. So I think they wanted to make it a big surprise. Oh, we've got Colin Farrell. Weird playing country singer, but actually Colin Farrell has done publicity for the Who's on Jonathan Ross the other week and everything, and he's great, absolutely great in it. The most surprising role I think he's ever done, and he's perfect in it. And also he embodies the fact that a lot of the things in this film you expect to happen, you expect him to be a kind of snotty, annoying rival, but actually the character is a pretty nice, decent guy. And there are lots of ways in this film kind of doesn't actually go down the easy route. Although there is a scene towards the end, which I won't give away, which I think slightly ruins it, where they have to bring in some peril. And I think that is a little bit contrived.
I sometimes bring too many notes into the studio. I've read so many. But two little facts. It only had a budget of $7 million. And they shot it in 24 days.
And it looks great, by the way. Lots of big, wide American vistas, which look fantastic.
Let's go on to The Lovely Bones, also released today. Nigel Floyd, what is it?
It's a very bad film from Peter Jackson, Fran Walsh and Philippa Boyens, who previously brought us Lord of the Rings, the astounding fantasy trilogy, and King Kong, a slightly bloated version of the old 1930s classic. This, however, is the one where they have really come seriously unstuck. Now, to be fair, the novel by Alice Sebald is apparently, and I haven't read it, impossible and intractable as a kind of source. The story is that a young girl, Susie Salmon, who's 14 years old, is murdered on her way home from school in December 1973. She then narrates the story from this strange limbo land that she calls the in-between. So she's sort of on her way to heaven, but she's still clinging on, and she's looking down on her family who are trying to hold it together, keep the family together, obviously traumatized by the loss of the child. And it just does not work on any level. The tone of it is so inconsistent. And if we hear a clip in a moment with Susan Sarandon, who plays a kind of hard-drinking, chain-smoking aunt who turns up to try to help the family through their grief, you may get an idea of what it is that we're talking about.
What's my mother doing here?
Look, you're not coping, okay? Len's worried, I'm worried. Your mother offered to help.
You invited her here?
Darling.
Hello, Mother.
Watch the hair.
Sorry.
Oh, look at you. Are you eating?
Mm-hmm. Is this all of it?
No, don't be ridiculous. That's just my makeup.
Oh, you are so handsome as hell.
Okay. Oh.
Lindsay, honey, are you going to say hello?
This child hates me. So, what'll it be, Jack?
Actually, I'm not drinking these days.
Well, that's your problem in a nutshell.
Susan Sarandon there in The Lovely Bones. Nigel, you're really selling it to me. Boyd Hilton, did you hate it as much as him?
I did, possibly even more.
It's rare that you hate things,
I've
noticed. It is.
This film really irritated me hugely. The nightmare of it is this. I read the first 150 pages of the novel. The novel is actually is beautifully written, and it's all about the tone of it, narrated by this girl. But the film doesn't even begin to capture that. And it's the problem is, originally it was going to be a project for Lynn Ramsey. It was going to be who made Ratcatcher, a great British, low-budget British film. And I imagine she would have done a great job. For some reason, he's decided, Peter Jackson's decided to make it a $100 million bloated special effects extravaganza. And the depiction of Heaven, or this uplifting, is kitsch and hideous and annoying. That Susan Sarandon character is from a completely different film, like a broad comedy, and it's supposed to be, you know, a moving, intense thread. It's kitsch, it's bad taste, it's silly and laughable. Mm. And I watched it and people were laughing. And there's a scene at the end where all these victims come back in this heavenly place and they play this Mortal Coil song from the Siren on it, which is a beautiful song. And it's awful. It's one of the most kitsch, bad taste moments I've seen for films in years. I think this is the most disappointing film from a great director for years and years.
Although he didn't really get King Kong right, did he?
But King Kong has loads of great stuff in it. It's too long, but loads of great stuff in
it. All right, let's go on to Solomon Kane, also out today. What is it, Boyd?
Solomon Kane, well, this is Nigel's favourite film ever, so he's going to...
All right, Nigel, explain it, please.
Solomon Kane is a sword and sorcery movie. Now, people don't like sword and sorcery movies because they think, on the one hand, there's a lot of bare-chested macho posturing, like you get in Conan the Barbarian, or they think there's a lot of whimsical fairy tale tosh, like you get in something like The Beastmaster. However, this film gets it absolutely right. It is, oddly enough, based on a series of stories, or derived from a series of stories, by the Conan creator, Robert E. Howard. But it has a reality to it. I know that sounds weird in a film which is fantastical and has two extraordinary kind of supernatural beasts, but it is pinned to some kind of social reality. And James Purfoy, as the leading character, absolutely superbly charismatic and brilliantly complex, and a really good rip-roaring adventure story.
Boyd, you don't agree?
No, I saw it last night. I paid good money to see it.
You went to an actual cinema.
A real cinema, in Leicester Square, in fact. And I sat there because I knew Nigel loved it. I read his review in Time Out and everything, and he's blown it out as being this really quite much better than you think it was being. I sat there thinking, this is so mediocre. I just thought, every level, I was bewildered. I just thinking, what is so good about this thing? And I know I have, you know, so much respect for Nigel's opinions, of course, but I was bewildered as
to why. Was the cinema busy?
It was pretty full, yeah. It was a kind of, you know, it was a preview. It opens officially today. It was one of those previews. There's only four rows in the cinema, weirdly, but it was full. And they seemed to be enjoying it, kind of enjoying it, but I didn't feel there was a great level of excitement.
Was it a treat to go to a real cinema and see things like trailers, for example, that you don't get at screenings?
I do very much enjoy going to a, especially when people don't talk and go on their mobile phones, which is quite a rarity these days.
So that's Solomon Kane out today. And the final new film is The Last Station. This is a film for which Helen Mirren has been nominated for an Oscar. She plays Tolstoy's wife, yes. Boyd Hilton.
It's interesting because, yes, this is a film about how Tolstoy, towards the end of his life, kind of created a new philosophy of the world, and they became this group of Tolstoyans following his. It's kind of like a peaceful but a group of people but who didn't want to have sex, which is a huge kind of theme of the film. She's his wife, who's very frustrated with this whole new way of life he's created, but particularly frustrated that he's about to sell the rights to all his novels, so that let them go for free so that everyone can read them around the world, and she wants to hold on to them for her kids. Into that mix, James McAvoy comes in, who's going to become his secretary, and he's the one we identify with in the film. This is one of those films, it looks rather boring and dull, I think we can safely say, from the outside. You think, really? Do I want to watch a film about Tolstoy's wife and a battle for copyright?
Do you ever really want to watch a film about an author? They spend most of their lives alone in a room with a pen and paper, a typewriter.
Well, this is doubly odd because, of course, this is many years after the fame that came to Tolstoy from writing War and Peace and Anna Karenina. So he is now a man in his dotage. And what we're arguing about here, as Boyd has very clearly pointed out, is just the question of who the copyright for these books will go to. Now, Paul Giamatti, who plays this rather sleazy leader of the Tolstoyan movement, actually gives a terrific performance, and he's a really weaselly little character. I think motivated by genuine sort of idealistic notions about, you know, this these books belong to the Russian people, blah blah.
But the interesting thing about this film is Helen Mirren great in it or not? A lot of people think she's terrible in it. It's a really over the top annoying character, but I think she has to be that way, and I think she's good in it.
Well, thank you for downloading Mark and Simon's podcast. They'll be back next week. I won't be filling in for them then. But let me recommend, in the meantime, the outstanding Daily Bacon. Not my words. Actually, they were my words.
but you should download it.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
If that podcast wasn't enough, visit my Uncut blog at www.bbc.co.uk/Mark Kermode for video reviews, anecdotes, and the chance to let me know your opinions.